Let's go down to the Urban Homestead, Pasadena by the freeway. Right down there on the Urban Homestead, Jules and his family are working away. Come on down to the farm in the city, back to the future, back to the plan. Right down there on the Urban Homestead, loving the life back into the land.
Oh, ooh, help the garden grow.
Singing,
oh, ooh,
we've got to help the garden grow.
Welcome to the Urban Homestead Radio. We are your hosts, Annie,
Justin,
Jordan.
Special thanks to our sponsor, Layman's, in Kidron, Ohio. For over 60 years, they have provided practical, non-electrical tools and appliances and home goods. Our family has been a huge fan of theirs since the 1990s and have purchased many quality products for our own homestead. When technology fails, their products will certainly work. So check out their website and online catalog at laymans.com. That's LEHMANS.com. We appreciate the support of this podcast.
Oh, ooh, ooh. Help the garden grow.
Sing it.
Oh, ooh, ooh.
We've got to help the garden grow.
Oh, ooh, ooh. Help the garden grow.
Sing it.
Oh, ooh, ooh.
We've got to help the garden grow.
Everybody, thanks for tuning in. Today we have our friend and financial advisor, Aaron Nossler, who works with Thrivent. Hi, Aaron. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for coming out.
Hey, guys. Good to be here, as always.
Yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and
your story.
Yeah.
How you got to be where you are today.
Wow.
We'll start with a living. It has to fit in 50 minutes, so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Keep it a bridge version.
Well, would say, wow, been a long journey. I'm probably the most non-typical financial advisor that you'll find, because getting into finance was a leap of faith. So I did quite a few things before, and they range from going to film school to opening my own pawn shop. And finally, I was craving something bigger and wanted to really use my talents to impact the people around me and the community in a positive way. So with that little bit of desire, I ended up with my Series 7 financial securities license. And was quite drastic for the path that I was on, but I knew that it needed to be done because of my upbringing. Being my dad was so into holistic health and giving his wisdom to everyone to better their health.
Are you allowed to tell his nickname to the public, or is what was he known as?
Who's your dad?
Who's your dad?
Yeah, I used to make fun of him for this, but his nickname started on radio, actually, and somebody called in and said something like, "Oh, you're like the Captain Carrot," and because of the time and the season or something, it stuck.
Oh,
it was in the
80s,
and like it became a thing. Okay. So everybody started calling him Captain Carrot, and we had memorabilia from, I'm telling you, shoes, carrot shoes. They were big, fluffy, and they were orange to a cape. He had vitamins.
A cape.
A cape, yeah. Mm. And so I used to tell people, yeah, my dad was Captain Carrot. And I'm like, what is that?
It was like a first FM radio something. What was it?
Yeah, that was so Sacramento KZAP radio. It was the first FM station. Oh. And so he was the first DJ when they transitioned from AM to FM in Sacramento. So I remember I was in middle school, Barrett Middle School, and one of the lockers had a KZAP sticker in there.
Okay.
And I thought that was pretty cool because it kind of put me in the in reality, like, wow, like, yeah. My dad was a kind of a big deal.
A health and fitness guru when you...
Yeah, that kind of came out of left field for him. He said he was always into health and fitness, but somebody kept asking, you know, like, what are your hobbies? What are you into? And he sort of picked one. And then he became, you know, the pioneer of the kind of back to the earth movement, alternative, not back to the earth movement. It was all going on at the same time. Yeah. The alternative food, alternative medicine movement, okay. is what he was doing back in the 70s. So.
And but so, he also inspired you to get started in finances. You said you were helping him because he hadn't. He was going through something that you got inspired to help your dad. So that's mm-hmm. why you got started mm-hmm. financially.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you guys can relate. Like, if you're raised by like a hippie-ish kind of person,
absolutely not. We have no idea what you're talking about.
Raised out of homestead style,
granola, no cold
sprouted,
showers,
sprouted mung beans, cold showers, quinoa,
Ezekiel 4:9 bread,
Ezekiel 4:9
wheat germ,
bread. Wheat germ, kyolic garlic right into my mouth. He would do garlic extract before I could even leave to go
we
to school.
We got cod liver oil.
Cod liver, same. Yeah, I had them mixed. So.
All one. Vitamin mix, protein shake.
Yeah. I'm sure like people listening to this right now are like, what in the world does this have to do with finance?
A little bit of family history here.
Yeah. So.
Wheat germ, all right.
So.
It's actually good.
You know, I'm a very observant person and realized at some point in my life that there was something missing, and I've learned that, you know, your parents instill things that they do well because they're doing it, and they don't instill into you things that they don't do or don't do well. It's not around. And so I realized that, you know, something my dad never instilled into me was this kind of understanding of how financial institutions work, banking, insurance, investments, you know, what are all these big companies mean? Merrill Lynch, New York Life. Mm-hmm. I remember when I got registered as a life insurance agent before I took the Series 7, I was like, oh, that's what New York Life is. It's a life insurance company. And I just, it was so like a deep dive, like opening my eyes to the world around me, and you know, just realizing that there was something missing. And so just like any kind of person who is more into like earthy lifestyle, not very business savvy, he didn't really instill these things into me. So at some point, after I got out of the pawn business, I realized that there was something missing. There was a gap in my understanding and how everything's connected. And so that's what I pursued, because I realized that really God was calling me to tell, to educate people in a different way about finance. Because the old school financial advisors are turning off millennials. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. our ETFs are returning, you know, an average premium of this and that, and your risk adverse, you know, reaction to this, you know, it shows that your profile and, you know, portfolio is this and that. And every millennial these days wants to throw up on that. And so I realized that, oh my gosh, like I'm called because I'm a storyteller that will dig to the root of something until I understand it completely, so I can then transcribe it to people.
Educate other people.
Educate other people in a relative way, meaningful way.
In plain English, yeah. Like, so yeah. You like to use the word holistic and holistic money or holistic management. That was one thing you were talking about to us about. Mm-hmm. You could do a holistic food, you could do a holistic business, and you were talking about holistic financial advice. So if you have, keep it brief, but no, any, what would you suggest or any tips to other people? people getting started?
Yeah, it relates with what you guys are doing here, and holistic is holism, and it's things that are all connected as a whole. It's kind of a circle of many things, synergy. It's essentially connected, but it's not. It's all about not avoiding something or not leaving something out that could be, you know, the missing link or one thing that keeps everything else in tune. And so when we're dealing with holistic finance, it's working to understand somebody's big picture in all things. So, you know, if you come into my office and I'm not looking at your financial situation in a holistic way, and I'm just looking at numbers on paper, and I'm not realizing that there is a behavior of money that hasn't been addressed, I might come up with some strategy that inevitably is not going to be sustainable, because it might work for a little bit, but not for the long run, because we didn't address something really important like behavior or
foundation for
something that is so rudimentary that needs to be addressed. So if I learn that somebody has a problem putting money away and they need a good incentive, like a good forced savings account, then we'll come up with a way to do that. Like maybe we'll set up another bank account and do an auto draw, and then I'll tell them, hey, don't take debit cards or checks, and let it be twice removed. So that way it's just automatically doing it. And people will admit if they need that, and they'll obviously really appreciate it, because you adapt. People adapt because you end up paying your cell phone bill every month, and your, you know, auto insurance, and your light bill, and you know, your Pinkberry bill. Like everybody, you know, splurges on these things every month, but they end up not making themselves a bill.
Yeah, what was the name for the, what do you call those, expenses? Or
Fixed expenses.
Fixed expenses.
Fixed expenses.
Monthly fixed expenses.
Yeah. So we just putting you on the board of all fixed expenses. And, you know, some people don't have a hard time putting money away, but some people do. And that's just an example of holistic financial planning. But really, holistic financial planning means, okay, how are we going to diversify somebody's financial story in a way that is incorporating growth and protection and distribution later on. And so all these things end up needing balance and diversification, because one specific product in the financial industry, call it a mutual fund, or one financial product in the financial industry, call it term life insurance. No one product is the perfect product. There's no such thing as the perfect product. There's only such thing as perfect planning. So you need to understand how all these different products can be combined in a balanced and diversified way to move somebody and to their goals. So it's kind of like what you guys do here in the sense
we diversify
of
farming,
balance and diversification. Yeah.
Animals, diversified in our expertise. We do it on a homestead level. You do it on a financial level, our business or whatever. It's different businesses. We don't like... Our dad would be like against monoculture, like every one crop for miles and miles and miles.
Oh, completely.
So, and then when you go to our place, it's like there's 100 crops in 100 feet, you know, 100 different crops, well, 100 different varieties. So maybe we can rewind a little bit and how we met.
Yeah, how we met.
And then how you came back into our lives and stuff like that.
So tell us how you met, how you found out about us, and I think it was about 8 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to Cal State LA and doing their film and mass communications program. And first thing I did is I Googled eggs, local eggs. I was looking for somebody that sold eggs. And you guys popped up. And then I
showed up one day, I think.
I showed up, but I found a lot more than eggs, you know. And yeah, I found the garden.
It just started the farm stand, I think.
Wow.
I think you were like, where you're customer number two.
No.
Yeah, on the farm
stand. You were labeled.
No. Yeah, where you were labeled.
Remember customer number two?
Yes.
How cool. I mean, it was like walking up to the Garden of Eden because it was everything
been there?
I was looking for.
You speak very familiar over then.
Yeah. I have in my dreams, actually.
We won't go there.
I don't know. What did you buy from us?
Eggs, probably.
Eggs and other stuff. Like, I know you came down. And then your dad, actually. You brought your dad one day, too, I remember. And then, or you brought your dad, and then he came back by himself.
Well, so this, I remember first day I came back to our house. I was living with my dad in Pasadena, and I came out and I did a spread, you know, of everything I just bought. Mm-hmm. It was like mustard greens, kale, I think there's even some duck eggs, what else, strawberries, this, that, and I just laid everything out on the counter. I still have a picture of it actually on my phone. And he walked in and was like, oh, what's this? And I'm like, he's like, oh, where'd you get that? I was like, this house up the street. He's like, what do you mean? Like, I was like, yeah, everything was grown right there. So that really intrigued him. And he came with me shortly after. And I felt like I needed to look no further. Like, I found everything I needed. But yeah, I literally, because I was driving down the street one day. I was in San Gabriel Valley, and I saw a little sign out front of somebody's house. It said fresh eggs, mm-hmm. and I'm like, oh yeah, like that's where I want to get my eggs. So mm-hmm. when I moved here, I just had the bright idea of Googling, you know, who sells eggs, and had put a Google ad on or something like that. And you guys are pretty savvy with the internet.
We've been there a long time. We were before Google. We were before Google. Well, that's how long we
were. Our website's older than Google.
Yeah. Well, Google was a company, but before it was a big search engine. Okay. Yeah.
Correction.
Well, before YouTube and Facebook.
So we're pretty old on the terms of the internet.
Paul.
Yeah. We're still old too, but then
balance, diversification.
Invest in yourself. Consider yourself.
Yeah, you guys all have like skills that are all balanced and diversified.
Yeah, I think fast forward
too
a bit.
Diversified.
Yeah.
Too many different.
Yeah. Too many diversification.
Yeah, can we?
May need to be a little consolidation in some.
Yeah,
we
need to monoculture our
a little bit.
Yeah, diversity. We need.
Yeah.
Because sometimes
we're a little too diversified.
I blame Dad for that, but we have a lot of dreams and a lot of goals, and sometimes like, just narrowing it
it's
down.
It's like a firework. It's like
so true, so true. You know, I was thinking actually, like, you know, the way God designs every living creature on this planet, it's balance and diversification. But what happens is it ends up being the least amount of moving parts. Mm-hmm. You know, beetle doesn't use that leg anymore. Like, it falls off over time, right? The vine needs to be trimmed so that you can focus on what you do mm-hmm. best. Mm-hmm. And the same thing goes with financial planning. Mm-hmm. Is you don't want to have, you want to have
growth
financial but, products yeah. that say this one gives you the growth you want. It also gives you this benefit that you want,
stability,
and it also does
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And so we can end up eliminating fees and other mm-hmm. things and focus on a complete plan that has things that do more than one thing so that you have balance and diversification mm-hmm. with the least amount of moving parts.
I believe there's even a passage in the Bible about pruning the vineyard.
Yeah, I think money is what mentioned.
Well, I mean, the passage was about pruning.
Yeah, pruning. Yeah.
To
we have
make
an
a
issue
harvest.
With some things
doing too
not,
much.
Not growing. I mean, there's an issue with things not growing. Okay, that is an issue, but some things grow too well, and that's we've had to do that mm-hmm. past year.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, because like you said, you have a passion for food and urban sustainability and in helping people, which you're helping us. And what we've, you know, with homesteaders or farmers or trying to be sustainable, people don't associate money being sustainable, and that's where sort of, you know, different, look at it a little different, because elements of the homestead, our homestead, is self-sufficient. However, there are bills that we need to be paid. If you need a future, yeah. If you need a future family, you know, so, you know, if you want to get out of debt, and there's property taxes and just general upkeep. So that whole, like, not just a position, but just saying, like, money can be sustainable. People don't put those two together.
Yeah, so, greed, money equals greed, and mm-hmm. money, you know, money's bad. Mm-hmm.
And what would you say to that?
Yeah, money is simply an expression of whatever you want it
to be. And you called it a tool. You know?
It's a tool. To empower your vision and your inner desire to propel yourself in the future, whatever it is you want. So it really isn't the money's fault for anything. It's our fault for doing such, you know, crazy stuff with it. Over the
love
years.
Of money is it's the problem. The love of money, we won't go there, but the love of money is the problem.
That's right. If you're making money your goal as to why your life pursuit is going the direction it's going, that is not sustainable. Something's going to falter. But if you understand the why that you're doing something, the money is simply something that is a tool that comes along the way. And if your vision of what needs to be done is so strong that you're willing to go out and ask for help, then you're going to get the tools and the resources that you need in order to cross that bridge. And so whatever it takes. And so I would say, like, hey, if I use an example, if your friend was drowning, and you had, you know, you didn't have enough space between him. You couldn't get him. You had like a stick, but you couldn't reach him. So what do? Is you run out into a public place and you're like, hey, I need a rope. I need a rope. And you're explaining to them why you're transferring that vision that's in your head into their head as quickly as possible. My friend's drowning. Oh God. Well, that needs help, right? So I'm going to go get a rope from that guy. And you're so passionate and the vision is so strong that you're gonna encourage everybody around you. So they're gonna give you the rope and you're gonna go and you're gonna get it. But before that, if your need or the vision wasn't that strong, you're like, do I really wanna embarrass myself and run into a public place and ask for a rope?
Or is that guy really drowning?
Yeah, right? So if it's not that big of a deal, then you won't do what it takes to get the tools and the resources that you need. So for somebody who thinks that they're doing what they love, like if you really love what you do, and you think that something needs to be solved so strong badly, then you'll do whatever it takes. You know, you'll run out into a crowd and you'll ask people, hey, you gotta hear about this. You know, you gotta support us, you gotta do that. So you know, it's really about your why. How you're going to get there will come to be, but the vision of the why is the most important part for anybody's life journey or a journey with money.
You think most people don't have the why? They try to get a shortcut, or why would people not have the why? They don't see it, or they don't believe it, or what?
I mean, maybe, you know, at one point money was the goal or something. You know, a lot of people, take a step back and be like, why am I going to this every day, doing this, doing that? But, you know, not to say that, like, desk jobs or this or that, like, accounting, doing admin, is anything that isn't the reason why, like, isn't your why. It's a task that has to be done in order to get to the future why. And so, you know, you see a small business owner, you know, come in, sweep his own floors every day, you know, but he's so passionate about doing it because his why is to have his shop. He's not embarrassed that he has to sweep his own floors. He's just in this kind of funny
beneath him
mode, that he's got to do it. And so yeah, whatever you have to do to get to your big why, I think having that vision is really, really important. So understanding that time is so valuable on the path there, and that, you know, being prudent with your time and allocating it in a good way, like efficient way, is just going to get you there without as much stress as, you know.
Yeah. You think you fast forward a bit from when you first met us to you showed up one day in early spring this...
I think it was February.
February 2017. Mm-hmm. So it was a couple months after Dad died, and we were going through a lot of financial... We had a lot of financial questions, let's put it that way. We had some decisions to make. We had business decisions, personal decisions, family decisions. And when you showed up one day, I think I hit you with both barrels, and you were sort of taken back.
Well, because here's the story. You have to give the backstory. You were sitting on the chair. I was sitting on the sofa, and we were talking, and Jordy's at work, and I literally said, we can't do this by ourselves, and we need help.
And you showed up on the porch, and he said, well, if you need any help financially, give us your card.
It was just missing the movie soundtrack.
Yeah, and angels singing in the background. No, they're cueing this. So it's like, oh, yeah, you recognized you from like 8 years ago. And it's like, oh, yeah, we remember, you know, you regular customer back then. And he said, yeah, I started finances. And then we had questions on finances. And then we sort of hit it off for a bit and helped us through a lot of the questions. I mean, we're running our own business. I mean, we're running Dad's business, running our own business. But there was a lot of things that we didn't know.
And then the thing was to build a better foundation. You know, you were helping us through, like, weed out stuff and see.
Well, like you said, being the children of hippies, they're focused on more of, like...
Changing the world.
But then if you don't have that foundation of, like... Like, a solid foundation and... And you know, Dad was a visionary, and I'm sure your father was, and there was something missing more of the, okay, like, where's the bills gonna, you know? And I mean, Dad was aware of that, but he wanted to throw his life into changing the world and not making money, but it was like there had to be an investment in him making changes to make to change the world, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so having been left with that, we're like, we have to build a bit of a more solid
relationship. Yeah, we didn't have... Obviously, it was sudden, and I think you came within a month or two after we buried him, after he died. So it was like, all these questions, decisions that had to be made, because although we did run the business, Dad made some of the mm-hmm. financials, and made some great financial mm-hmm. decisions yeah, mm-hmm. that, you know, if you look back, it was like, wow, how did he do that? Mm-hmm. And that's how we got this far, because of Dad's decisions. Our question was how to get better, how to be more sustainable, and how to be like holistic and diversify our situation, because we are still tied in with agriculture. Mm-hmm. And if we do have a crop failure on a certain crop, mm-hmm. we would lose. So we were mm-hmm. trying to diversify our income avenues or financial, so now we don't have all our eggs in one basket complete, mm-hmm. you know. So mm-hmm. when you came along, I think we talked for a couple hours, and then we came back and then we talked for more hours, and then we had things like that just to try to clear some things up. And I think you did help us out. It was good timing, perfect timing, actually, when it showed up, so we were able to bounce some ideas off. And then you also volunteered a couple of times.
Yeah, it was funny because I showed up in a t-shirt and
that's it?
Sorry. No, I was just thinking that. No, I came.
I just like showed up in a t-shirt. I'm like, okay.
It said Jordan Captain must Carrot. Miss
that one. I missed this one.
It said Captain Carrot on it. And, no, I came specifically to help
the t-shirt.
You back there. Because when I invited some friends and their kids to come to the. Front Porch Farm Stand, and then like 2 weeks later I came back, and within that time period your dad had passed, and you opened the door, Justin, for the first time.
I was crying, so I didn't want to answer the door. because that's what I said. We were having an emotional discussion on finances and what to do. How to pay for everything. So.
Yeah, and so I showed up because I told you. I said, look, you know, you're a man down. Like, you need some help back there. So I showed up in a T-shirt. And then you guys are just like, hey, Aaron's here. And then we need to talk about the finance stuff. And Anise comes out with, like, all these folders and this and that. I was like, Oh, really?
That helped.
I was like, yeah, oh, that's what you need. Okay.
We don't need God.
And I, like, went back to my car and, like, got
put
my bag and put my tie on.
Got your briefcase.
Yeah. Some shoes. Yeah. Some pants. No. Yeah, you were saying, yeah, we were miscommunication. We needed help and on the financial.
Sustainable money side.
Sustainable money.
Yeah, because we had
that time. We were sustainable.
I don't think at that time we were gardening or doing anything because we were just in kind of
yeah, we had just incorporated the business.
The sinking ship.
Yeah. I don't think it, maybe the incorporation wasn't even done yet.
No, and I think we had taken time off the farm boxes too. We were just.
We were basically shut
down.
Yeah,
I think if I remember correctly, the bank accounts were still frozen.
Yeah.
So I got hit with all these things. Like, and this, we're trying to decide if we should do this and this and this and this and this. And so I went, okay.
Rewind. Let's start.
Yeah, I know that there needs to be something like addressed. You needed to get a little bit of education on like a financial pyramid. And so I invited you to one of our offices to meet with this guy who's been doing this for probably 30 years. And the reason I love him is he makes everything really simple, but almost too simple. Mm-hmm. Like he barely speaks. He's like, you know, one word kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I remember you were in the office, he drew out the financial pyramid. Mm-hmm. The reason why that's important is because it shows what steps have to be done first before other things. And if that's not done, you know, and the other thing is done first,
it's then fall apart. Yeah.
It has some risk potential for that other thing that wasn't done to not be in place. And so it's just the order of steps.
Yeah. I think he said, yeah, most people do it this way.
Yeah,
and then
financial
said,
pyramid
yeah,
upside down.
Yeah, but they're doing it upside down.
It's like all these kids with Bitcoin right now. You know, they're throwing all this money and they have no cash in their emergency reserve, and they're putting all
Bitcoin?
Their money.
No,
so what is the pyramid? What is the pyramid? I mean, if you can describe that.
So it shows. It shows.
There's a foundation.
A base, and really the base is going to be your addressing any risks. So. Really insurance come at the foundation. So if scenario A happens, if the house caught on fire, right, then that would make everything else that we're trying to do not
relevant.
Yeah. Relevant. Yeah. So why would you be, you know, investing money into the business to make this income when that's the business isn't protected? And so same goes with like your income. Say you make $5,000 a month and you're putting 30% of that into investments or into a cookie jar, call it, okay? And you get sick or you're unable to work, then that $5,000 stops coming in and then you can't put into that cookie jar anymore. So it's order of steps. So an insurance product could be used to put in place for income replacement. And so you're making your income and that income's going here and going there and being allocated in all these different places. And so income stops because you can't go to work anymore and perform your job. Then that insurance kicks in, allows the plan to continue on sustainable. Yeah. It's called self-completing. So anything on the foundation are going to be things that are going to kind of self-complete your plan. An insurance is going to kick in, a trust, a will, an emergency reserve. Those kind of things will make everything, will impact everything else or make everything else possible. So
we just had to rethink some, because we're basically starting from scratch. The term I'd used back then was, back then, that was a year ago. Back then was, we're at 30-year startup because we've been in business. Dad was in business selling produce for 30 years, but we had no business because we were starting from scratch. So it was really to learn the steps of the foundation, to learn from, it was sort of a, what do you call it, oxymoron or something. People surprised, like, oh, you're just starting. But no, we've been in business for 30 years, but it was under Dad's name and under Dad's thing. So we had to basically start from scratch and start over again, even though we've been in business and running the business for 30 years.
So, yeah, I mean, that's, I think I want to just touch on what you said about the pyramid. How would you see that related to urban farming on, like, you know, you obviously advise probably a lot of individuals and businesses. How do you see what you teach tie into sustainable living, urban farming, self-sufficient living, families who are living, you know, off their little bit of land, you know, farmers in a way? I mean, how do you see your financial advice tying into that? I mean, you definitely have helped us, but.
Yeah. So for somebody who is in this mindset, I would just encourage to get your insurances in place and think of what do I want to happen if I didn't come home tomorrow? What could I know would happen? So what kind of foresight can I take action on now to have an impact later on? It's just like growing anything, right? You're gonna plant a seed, it's gonna grow, and you're gonna reap the benefits of a crop. So I would say the most important thing is just having some sort of emergency reserve fund, especially with what's going on. So if you're a farmer, if you wanna be away from, you know, the hustle and bustle and the norm and the 9-to-5s and the consumerism and all that, and you just want to get your financial house in order, I would really focus on having enough cash into an account that you're not going to dip into. And I think I said earlier, for a lot of people, it helps them when you just create an account with a bank that you normally don't frequent or you don't even see on a daily basis, and you don't get a debit card or checks from them. And so that way there's no incentive. It's harder to take it out, right? So I would say focus on your emergency reserve fund. That would be a big first step for most.
Because I mean, like people. A lot of like, I would say, speaking personally, I'm not into the whole big financial conglomerate world, like, you know, New York Life. It's like, not a, you have a vision of those people of kind of like controlling like all of the world. So you kind of try to want to be self-sufficient in your own ways from being involved in big corporate, big finance. And so part of why we, you know, Dad took the steps to be self-sufficient was he didn't want to be tied into people telling him what his money's going to do and all that. So one of the, I think, most interesting things to learn is you can be smart about money, you can invest in certain ways without, you know, being tied into the system.
Without selling out.
Yeah, without selling out. I mean, that's strong for me. I don't want to sell out to the system, but at the same time, we do live in the system, but how to do it in a sustainable, healthy, not selling out to the big.
Holistic.
It all comes down to voting with your dollar. And so wherever you're allocating your money,
by produce or
supporting your local farmers.
Supporting your local farmer. Honestly, you know, the stock market. Like, if you look at the history, I mean, these guys started the New York Stock Exchange under a buttonwood tree back in
stock
and
like selling cattle.
I think it was cattle. Yeah. Right. Real stock. Yeah.
So I would encourage people like.
The bull market really meant bull market. Minor detail,
this
but
massive. Yeah, running of the bulls. They're just demolishing bears, and it's great. if you just look at the reason that the nature behind the stock market, it's really quite simple, and it's not so you know, big scary system. If you think about it, it's just your, these companies go from a private company to publicly owned so that everybody who believes in your company can have some small share of it. And so if you want to not be in the system, just, you know, you can do the same kind of thing by, there's a lot of these micro loaning platforms now where like you can give somebody a micro loan or
peer-to-peer or something.
Yeah, do peer-to-peer or whatnot. But honestly, you know, there's some companies that are private, some companies that are public. And if you look at companies that are also owned by members, like a credit union, that would make a big difference too. So are you in a pool? Is your organization, so like a mutual fund company? Mm-hmm. It's a mutual fund of people pooled together. There's a lot of insurances, health insurances that are like that. It's a pooled effect. Life insurance is pretty incredible. It's just a pool of people that, you know, before life insurance as a financial product was invented, you had the community just coming together.
Amish community.
And giving somebody who lost a loved one resources so that, you know, they didn't get set back too much. So life insurance was just a system of, they used all these numbers and said, hey, let's create a table and say, if everybody put in this amount of money, based on how many people pass away in this amount of time, if everybody puts in, based on the probability and the, you know, a table of mortality, we'll see that if everybody puts in this amount, then the probability of somebody passing away, they'll get this amount to carry on their family so they won't have setbacks. So it's a pool of people coming together. And so Mass Mutual, all these mutual companies, they're actually, you know, just owned by their shareholders. And then a dividend, if you heard that term dividend, it's a payment to the policy holders of the company that are just you and me, and it's on top of surplus. So once all the bills are paid, everything, then the company makes a profit, then dividends are paid to the shareholders. Mm-hmm. So it's this very sustainable thing where as we get more policy holders, more dividends go, or more profit is made above the expenses and all that, and it goes back to the policyholders. And it just continues on like that. So life insurance companies are a great example, and they really aren't affected by a lot of the economic downturns because they have such a large account that has to pay for, you know, the claims that everybody could make. So
you recently gave a presentation called Code Your Goals. If you want to share a little bit about that and maybe some success stories of your clients, hopefully we're one of your success stories. But,
maybe on the way. Maybe. Maybe not quite.
To be determined.
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe off there the record.
There's a possibility.
As long as Bitcoin keeps going, you guys are going to be good.
I know, right?
What's Bitcoin? No. So.
You guys should make your own cryptocurrency. You ever thought about that?
Oh, am I talking about that?
Their currency?
Yeah.
There we go.
That'd be cool.
Real stock. You get stock market.
No, it's your own currency. That'd be cool.
So
invest in a duck.
Duck market.
Currency, yeah.
Yeah.
Duck market. Yeah. Maybe a chicken market. And
right. Cryptocurrency would only buy things at the homestead.
Yeah. So
that's a
make your own bank
topic. Yeah.
I think Dad did discuss that. He wanted to come up with the money system.
I guarantee your dad came up with cryptocurrency way before.
He wanted to have like Arvin Homestead bucks where you know, people bought stuff, traded with it, and they got Arvin Homestead credit.
Barter or something.
Yeah.
Hours.
That's exactly it.
Ithaca has their own. Ithaca, New York?
My aunt lived in Ithaca. She had Ithaca dollars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they created their own money. I think dad's, one of his ideas was to print our own money. No, print Urban Homestead money. That's good.
Yeah, you gotta.
Because like I said, he didn't want to get. Like I said, we kind of grew up. keeping out of the system, like banks and, you know, cash your money out, put it in gold and put it under your bed kind of thing.
That's exactly what this whole cryptocurrency is it's not being regulated by the IRS or, you know, the Rothschilds, if you want to call it that, right? It's not owned by any World Bank, so it's its own bank. So, right.
So back to your code your goals. Get a little distracted, sidetracked, but yeah.
Code your goals. Yeah. It's kind of like putting yourself in a video game, and I realize that all these kids are staying at home and they're getting real fat and they're doing everything they really want to do, their inner desires, through this digital character. And so I was thinking, like, you know, if you were a character and you could control anything that you wanted to accomplish, how would you code that video game? How would you code your goals? And so coding your goals is basically, it's using terms like, you know, video game terms or app, digital app terms, to create a code that has a high probability of going from A to B. And so in finance, there's a term called discounting. And what you do is you quantify some goal. So you turn a vision into numbers. So my goal is to have a business that is, you know, the biggest urban farm in the world. And it's a day spa and people can come in here and people can do this and do all this stuff. So there's the goal or the vision or the dream. And then what you do is you start putting numbers to that. Okay, in order to... So that kind of business needs to be operating at this amount. I'm going to need X amount of dollars to do that. So you turn a vision. That might have been a hard example because it's just huge. But if you want to do something simpler, you say, I want to have my own radio show. And you say, what needs to happen to get my own radio show? Well, I got to meet somebody. I got to meet the right person who's going to get me into that. Or I got to buy my equipment. How much is that equipment going to cost? It's going to cost $15,000 to get all my equipment. So what you do is you discount that amount. Say you want to accomplish that in 1 year. So you discount that and you divide the end goal amount by, say, 12 months. And then you divide that by 30 and you say, well, I'm going to need to come up with X amount of dollars per day to do that. And then also you got to look at it holistically and say, what else comes in play when it comes to having my own radio show? Oh, well, I need guests, I need this, you know, I need to go to events, I need to do all these things. So you say,
networking.
Networking. So how many network events do I need to go to per month to give me a high probability of eventually speaking to that one guy who's gonna, you know, give me that syndication or whatever? And am I networking with the right kind of people? So if I walk down Third Street Promenade and asked everybody for $20, what's the probability of somebody giving me $20 if I only asked two people? Probably really low. But if I asked 100 people for $20,
chances are
really high. So you go to the extreme, and then you go to the minimum, and then you find a happy medium. And it's kind of like that when you're figuring out how much money you should put away, like you were saying, Jordan, like what can people do, and to just do the most basic thing of, you know, financial planning, and it's creating your own cash, like emergency reserves, also having the right protection. So finding a comfortable, meaningful amount that you can put away every day, every week, every month, and it comes with thinking, can I put $5 away each month? Of course, everybody can. So
it won't make or break you.
Yeah. Right, you'll never notice it. The funny thing is a lot of people don't even do that. And they say, of course I can, but they're not even doing it. So okay, can you put $200 away each month? No, that's a little much. Okay, well, what's in between? Can I do $50 a month? Yeah, can I do $100? No, it's a little much. And then you just find that middle ground, say it's $75, and then you go, okay, there's my comfortable, meaningful amount that has a high probability of
success. Saving.
So then you create that forced savings account, whatever your behavior is on money, to allow you to start putting that away. And
after 10 months, you get $750?
Yeah, and it's just on autopilot. You don't even notice it. And so I always use the example, like if future you came back, or say somebody came up to you and they looked just like you and they said, hey, my name's Blessing in Disguise. And so, you know, I took 10% of every single paycheck you ever made and you didn't even notice.
Hello, Blessing.
And you'd be like, oh my God, I love you so much. But at the time, you know, you probably struggled once or twice and you said, God, I could really use a little bit of money. But you adapt and life goes on. And then all of a sudden, you know, you start stashing it away. And then in the future, you're going to make yourself really happy. So it's delayed gratification, right?
But it's good visualization, good points. Because like you said, people get thing they need $15,000 for radio show or car or down payment or something like that. And he's like, well, I can't get that. But if you divide it by 12 and you divide it by days, and then divided by, you know, and then it gets down to now it's attainable.
Or exactly. I had a girl, she wanted to do a coffee cart, an espresso machine on a cart, and that was her goal. And she wanted to do it in 4 years. And I said, well, how much is that? $13,000 she needed. So we divided it by 4, divided that by 12, divided that by, you know, weeks or whatever. I said, if you're not putting this much money away per month or per week, then you're falling behind or you're doing too much. Because, you know, balance is balance. You can't be doing too much either because it's not sustainable, right? So we wanted to find that perfect amount that was, you know, a path, right? An even path to get to her goal. It's not too hard and it's not too easy.
Yeah, and I want to break in there. I was, you know, besides all that, the finance stuff, I was you came at it from like also faith-based too. Mm-hmm. Which kind of because like I said, there's the money talk and then with a little faith-based twist, and so I was that kind of helped me see you know, finances a little better. And so how does that, you know, how does faith play a role in your life? And I believe there was one book that you gave one of my coworkers that I work with, and it was really, it was a faith-based book. Maybe you can share about that.
Yeah, try to make it as simple as possible, mm-hmm. but faith and finances, mm-hmm. I mean, that can open a lot of discussion. I look at it real simply put. I've realized in my life that anything God wants you to do is always harder in the beginning, and it pays off in the end. Anything temptation is telling you to do is easy in the beginning and it doesn't work out in the end, or it's a lot harder in the end. So incorporating faith and the way God intended us to be a good steward with his resources, then by putting away now, he's like, I don't want to. I'll wait until things get better and I'll start putting away or dealing with it then. But an infinity amount of scenarios could happen between now and then. And so by not taking advantage and being a good steward now, then it may never happen later. So when you're dealing with faith and finances, it's just being a good steward and doing what you know God is telling you is a good idea and putting it into action. And dealing with fear and, you know, dealing with a struggle in the present so that it's going to pay off in the end. I think that's, mm-hmm. that's it.
Yeah, so what was that book that you shared? Like I said, I was leafing through it too at work. And like I said, it was a faith finance book. What was the book called?
Yeah, New Money Mindset, mm-hmm. was written by Brad Hewitt, the CEO of Thrivent. Mm-hmm. He talked about looking at money as a tool, mm-hmm. and not as a goal. And how eventually you can get into a mindset of surplus. And when you're in surplus, it actually goes beyond your own pocketbook, like your own pockets thinking, oh, I've got so much money, I'm in surplus. It's actually so much more connected to God than that, thinking that actually when my mind is in surplus, I'm not worried about money at all, because there's an unlimited amount of resources. God has supplied me with everything I need. And so it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, is if you know the why and you're doing what, you know, you're reaching your vision of the garden. What is your vision of heaven? Like, how can I recreate that here? And so if you have that vision, then all of the tools and the resources and everything that you need will come to you, because we live in abundance. You're in surplus. So if you think that you need to hold on to all these things and, oh, I can't give that up, I can't do that, I can't do that, then you don't have trust. And so trusting that the goal being something you love to do, trusting that if you have that in mind, then everything you need to make that happen will come to you, will basically be blessed. And it will come in many forms, like a cat.
She just said, amen.
She woke up.
So we're coming to the end of our hour. Anything you'd like to share with our listeners before you wrap up? Last words of advice, and, you know, just maybe
success
summarize
stories, failures.
I would just go back to identify the two voices in your head. You ever seen those old cartoons with, like, the devil on one side of your shoulder and you know, an angel on the other side? Like, yeah, you pick up that cigarette, it'll feel so good. Like, go ahead. So, I think the biggest accomplishment for me was identifying the two voices between temptation and what God is telling you to do. And so if you know what's temptation, then you can put that off, right? You can let it come and then try to laugh at it, right? Say, I know why you're here, I know that you're trying to tempt me to do this and whatnot, but know that anything that you're choosing not to do because you're scared, anything that you know, like, would take just being really bold, just go do it and face that fear, and then you're gonna walk away and be like, you know, that was so easy, now I'm ready to do the next thing and the next thing. So
Sounds fascinating and also scary at the same time. You should have a disclaimer on that. Don't try this at home or something. No.
Like you, man. I see you looking like there's all these girls you want to talk to, and you're not going out there and doing it. So
that's a different podcast. We just kept. So how do people? Where did that come
Hold
from?
Hold on. Wait. Well, I want to hear more of this.
Might delete that part.
Wait, we're going back to this.
Be bold.
Stay tuned for the next one.
Aaron and speed dating. No, yeah. So, where people can find you, reach you, or don't reach you, or
yeah, if you're completely
off the grid.
So I have my own cryptocurrency. It's called No.
He's selling stuff.
Yeah. No, easily find me on LinkedIn. Just Google my name, Aaron Nosler, or you can email me to aaron.nosler@thrivent.com. Do we need to do spelling or anything like that?
I think that's good. We can put it in the description.
It'll be in the podcast description. Yeah, we'd like to thank you for helping us.
Our family
through our trials and tribulations, and hopefully we're listening to the right voice in our heads and stuff.
Hey, man.
Yeah, so
we didn't know what the angel sounds like. I don't know what the angel part sounds like. Yeah.
Morgan Freeman
going out.
Morgan Freeman. No.
He sounds like God all the time.
Isn't who plays God?
Morgan Freeman plays God very well.
Yeah. He's got that voice. Doesn't get rattled.
Go talk to her, Justin. Go talk to her.
Alrighty.
I'm
There's a story here. You got to tell me about this.
You got to fill us in after.
We better end this before it gets too rowdy. But
there's no alcohol at this table.
Yeah. So yeah, we appreciate your help volunteering and so, your financial advice getting us through, especially last year was brutal financially, emotionally, and spiritually. We still have some scars we can work through, but it was a blessing and a miracle for you to show up when you did, and we really appreciate your help
getting us through that.
Thank everybody for tuning in. Yeah, and thanks for tuning in.
Bye.
Bye. See ya.
Let's go down to the urban homestead, Pasadena by the freeway. Right down there on the urban homestead, Jules and his family are working away. Come on down to the farm in the city, back to the future, back to the plan. Right down there on the urban homestead, loving the life back into the land. Oh, ooh, ooh, help the garden grow. Singing, oh, ooh, ooh, we've got to help the garden grow.
The Urban Homestead theme song was written and recorded by Tom Fair. Thanks, Tom.
To the end of our show.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Be sure to tune in until next time. This is Anais.
Justin.
Jordan. Keep on growing.
Oh, 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 help the garden grow. Sing it. Oh, 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 we've got to help the garden.
Folks, remember to follow us on our website, urbanhomestead.org, also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We love to hear your feedback, and if you'd like to become a podcast patron, go to urbanhomestead.org/podcast.